Episode 21.
I'm always educating myself. I always want to make myself better, because if I make myself better, I make the people around me better. So if you're doing, if you have a procedure on how you're going to road test the car and what you're looking for, and it's all written out how you want it done, nothing gets overlooked. There's nothing they can bypass.
Welcome, aftermarketers. Prepare to learn just one thing from today's episode and take action on your journey to remarkable results. A warm welcome to William Bill Hill of Mighty Auto Pro in Medina, Ohio. Hey, Bill, are you ready to share your remarkable results?
I really am. I'm looking forward to this.
Hello, aftermarketers. Carm Capriotto here. Today's guest is Bill Hill from Mighty Auto Pro in Medina, Ohio. But before I get to the show open, I want to run down two things I need you to do. First, pay homage to our guests and give the podcast a rating and review on iTunes. The best way to get to iTunes is via the RemarkableResults.biz website. On our episode page, just click on any iTunes icon. Once there, click on the blue button that says View in iTunes. This takes you to the iTunes store. Find the ratings and review button and go at it. And thanks so much for being honest in your assessment. I appreciate it. You can always let me know what's on your mind anyway by emailing me, carm@remarkableresults.biz. I'll reply, I'm just a normal guy who's all ears. Bill Hill, owner of Mighty Auto Pro from Medina, Ohio, has been there 17 years. Has a 10,000 square foot facility with 16 bays, 5 techs, 2 service writers, 1 customer service specialist, along with a customer service assistant and a shuttle driver. It's a total of 13 associates that work with Bill. He believes that processes and procedures are very important to a successful shop. However, he also believes in having fun. He says that you need to make fun an important part of your day, because in this business it can be challenging, and you all know that. Listen for the off-the-wall events that have happened with Bill's total encouragement. Yes, and I challenge you to go off structure like Bill has to create a buzz inside and outside your shop. Bill also shares some great wisdom and tells a few great stories about his transformation from struggling shop owner to an engaged, caring leader. His story fits the mold of so many very successful entrepreneurs in our industry that went from good tech to great business owner. There's no doubt that there are many great takeaways as you listen to learn just one thing and implement it in your own world. You know, I've said this before, but there is so much to learn from the podcasts that it's been called sometimes a bachelor-style learning platform for the soon-to-be shop owner, or for the shop owner who wants more sales, more freedom, and more profits. Tried and true failures and successes from the industry's great operators. And here's one of them. Here we go. Bill, what was the boldest decision you ever made in business?
The boldest decision I can tell you happened in June of 2007. It was a Tuesday afternoon. We were very busy at the shop, and I was miserable. Long story short, working 60 hours a week. I can't say I was short on money, because I was making good money, but I had no life. I would be there from 7:30 in the morning until 7:30, 8 o'clock at night sometimes. And I was sitting there talking to my significant other, and I said, we need to fix this, because I can't live this way anymore. This is one of the most unhappy points in my life. I should be on the top of the world. I own my own business. I'm somewhat successful at it. But personally, I'm miserable all the time. And not only was I miserable, I was making everybody around me miserable. So I decided to join a coaching club. So I found a coach to help me transform myself and my business to make me a better person, to make my business better.
So it wasn't a fun time. And you know, there's a lot of guys that are sitting on the fence about wanting to join an organization that can help them. And was it this extreme need, or did you have the vision that says, I need help?
Well, I knew they had taken my business to the point where I couldn't grow it anymore myself. And I knew I needed help. And common sense says, if you need help, you just got to go out and ask for it. It's the old story, when a student is ready, the teacher will appear. I just happened to have a fax come across, and I went at that exact moment. I signed up for it that day, faxed it back, and I was in Phoenix, Arizona, 6 weeks later.
Do you believe it was life-changing for you to have done this?
Absolutely. True story. I went to Phoenix, and I thought, what are they going to teach me? I pretty much know everything. Maybe I'll pick up one or two golden nuggets. I came back on the airplane, 10 pages, 32 pages of legal-sized notes that I took while I was there.
And you couldn't wait to start doing all of them, right?
Absolutely. On my way home from there on the airplane, I took the top 10 things I wanted to do. And on Monday morning, when my employees showed up at 7:30, I started implementing them right that just that very same day.
Okay, so were you kind of called Wild Man Bill at the time?
Well, you know, I was listening to one of your iPodcasts earlier, and Greg said everybody called him Boss Hole. That's me. My employees felt that same way. Everything that he said was a great reflection of who I was.
But it seems like at this current moment, you figured out what extreme leadership means, because it seems like it's all about your people and training and engagement and involvement. So what were the top, give me the top three of those 10 you wanted to implement back then?
Well, the first thing I wanted to implement was I wanted a better culture in my shop. I wanted the people who worked for me not to feel like they had to be afraid of me, that they had to feel like if they made a mistake, they were going to get yelled at. I needed to be less confrontational, more understanding. I needed to treat my customers better. While I had great customers, their experience with me was the only time they came to see me was if they had a problem. And I wanted them to be able to become friends. I didn't want to just have a business relationship with them. I wanted to be friends with them. And so we immediately started having a lot more fun at work. It took a lot for me. I mean, it wasn't something that happened overnight by any means, but it got better and better. And eventually, the business started to grow exponentially.
So you changed as a person in order to make the business change.
That's correct.
Wow. What was the second thing?
The second thing was I started doing some marketing to bring customers in, and I started looking at my customer base and saying, okay, I want to clone these customers, my top 20%. So I actually bought a list from USA Info and started going after people like my best customers, doing direct mailing. And the business, you know, immediately started showing great results. I took it from the first year we were doing 900,000, we took it to 1.4 million the first year.
Was that goal shared amongst your people, or was that something private you hoped to have?
One of the things I learned in the coaching group was to share everything. No hidden agendas. Be honest. Be upfront. When you're honest and upfront with them, they're honest and upfront with you. So I've always kind of kept that policy. One of my employees will tell you to this day, it's almost a fault for me now because I almost am too honest about things.
That helps build great culture when your team is so engaged in what your expectations are.
Yes, absolutely.
So let's talk about your team, your focus on training, the engagement that they have. Give us a highlight of if I came to work for you, what would I expect?
Well, as a technician, you would expect that you would get top-notch training. I have top-notch equipment. My technicians are required, actually everybody who works with me is required to do 40 hours of continuing education every year, myself included.
Okay.
So my technicians will get great training. I send them to a high-end class. They don't go to just an average class where a bunch of, say, tire changers or those type of mechanics are going.
Right.
They're top-notch training classes. I can tell you that last year, they're required to do 40 hours of education. Last year, I had one to 130. The least guy out of the top five did 80.
Wow, and that's a huge commitment on their part, and you're not afraid to train anyone. A lot of people say, I'm not going to train my people, but what if they leave? They take all that training with them, and I guess the other coin is if you don't train them, look what happens.
Well, my job is to keep them. I mean, I don't look at it as they're going to take that with them. My job is to make them happy and want to stay with me, not look for other jobs. So I try and give them the culture where they can have fun and still make a good living.
Excellent. Let me ask you another question about where you're finding the training that you know is important for them. Is it supplier? Is it out of network? Do you have connections with training companies? Where's it coming from?
Well, we have connections with training companies. There's a couple of very good ones in our area. Also, through AC Delco, they offer some training at the local colleges. NAPA offers some pretty good training. I allow my technicians, I'll give them a series of five or six things that are going on that month, and they get to choose what they want to go to. And just so as a side note, I pay for their training, but I don't pay for them to go. My feeling is my investment in them is me paying for the training. Their investment in themselves is going for the training on their own time.
Wow, that is fabulous. Now, if you figure that a normal class is 2-3 hours, and they need to do 40 hours, they're training almost every month.
Yes, every month. And sometimes they go twice a month. Like the guy who did 130, he went on sometimes. Like in the summertime, maybe not so much, but when it's cold out, they'll go 3 or 4 times a month.
You know, Bill, customers don't appreciate what it takes to service them, to diagnose them. And great systems and procedures can be a killer app for a company, meaning they could just make them shine. What are the benefits to great systems and procedures inside of your shop for your customer?
Basically, nothing, if everything is done the exact same way every single time, nothing gets overlooked. So if you have a procedure on how you're going to road test the car and what you're looking for, and it's all written out how you want it done, nothing gets overlooked. There's nothing they can bypass. If you know, we have a system where when the car is finished, we have two people road test the car. The technician who fixed it and myself or one of the service writers does a second road test. That never gets bypassed, so the customer never feels the repercussions of something being missed.
So does the entire group understand that the procedures must be followed?
Yes, to the letter. I mean, my feeling is that when you start to deviate from the way the system is set up, then you're creating more headaches. What we want to do is create less headaches. So we make sure everyone is on the same page every single time.
So tell me about the most recent procedure or system that you updated that made improvements to the company.
Probably the most recent procedure is we used to do a paper safety inspection. Well, we recently went to a paperless safety inspection. Mm-hmm. And now everybody, of course, technicians don't like change. But now that we all have tablets and they do it electronically, and we made our own safety inspection to the letter. And my rule is every car that comes into place has to have a safety inspection. I don't care if it's there for a flat repair. I don't care if it's there for, you know, air pressure test. We are going to do a complete safety inspection.
I'm laughing inside. You said technicians don't like change, but then every day things change around them with technology. So help me understand
true.
That. They may not like change internally. Oh, I got to fill this form out, or I have to do this. But do they must, they wouldn't be technicians if they didn't love the challenge of learning new technology all the time.
Well, that's true. And as technicians, you all know this, is down deep, we have a thing. We want to fix everything. You know, that's what we do. We fix things. And so their goal to learn something new, if it's going to make them better at what they do and be able to fix something, then they'll do it. But the thing is, I have to get them to get the buy-in.
Great. That's a great answer. Thanks. You know, so many shops don't charge what they want, what they deserve, what they feel they need. Tell me how you feel about that.
Well, one of the things that bothers me the most about that is we spend a tremendous amount of money on equipment, on training. We have huge overheads between buildings, utilities, insurance. I have loaner cars. And so many shops that I talk to, when you tell them that you charge, you know, $108 per hour, they look at me like I have three heads. Well, when you have the equipment that you have to buy, when you have the best technicians in the area, when you provide all the services we do, when we provide the value to the client, we offer a lifetime warranty in every repair that we do. So we provide that value, we provide the quality of the technician working on it, and we stand behind it. If a customer has a problem, they don't have a problem. So if you provide all of those things, there's no reason that you shouldn't be able to charge what you're worth. And I see, I have a friend who owns an air conditioning company locally here, and he has four trucks and four HVCA technicians. And his net profit last year was 33%. But he has no overhead. He has no building to worry about. His overhead is his trucks and the little bit of stuff that he keeps inside them as far as tools and parts and that type of thing. But his biggest overhead is gas and his insurance and, of course, the vehicles.
And so a service call from an HVAC contractor isn't cheap. And I guess we're all willing to pay for it because we're stuck. We don't have heat. We don't have air conditioning. On the other hand, the car is just as important with just as much need inside the family unit. And people don't seem to, I mean, do they shop HVAC as much as they shop service work?
I don't think so. I think when you're looking for an HVAC guy, it's more of an emergency, unless you're having to have to do some maintenance work on it. But in most cases, it's the same thing. I when I was talking to this friend of mine, his average repair order is $320. And I think nationally, the average repair order for a shop is probably less than that. I think the last time I heard it was $285.
Wow.
So there's a significant difference there.
Yeah, it's such a great point to bring up that labor rates, I'm not saying that they have to go up, but in a competitive area, you find a big range, don't you?
Oh, absolutely. You know, when I talk to people across the country to run my coaching group, there's some of them were as low as $70, and I have a couple that are at $148.
Yeah, you're right about what Greg Buckley was talking about on this last podcast that we put out. Yeah, kind of very similar, and I appreciate your comments on that. So, Bill, in the eyes of the customer, it's the most important thing. Do you survey them to find stuff out?
I do. I ask them what the best experience they've had recently, the worst experience they've had recently. If I talk to a client who just came back from vacation, what did you like best about where you were? What did you like, you know, not so much? How were you treated? How well were you treated? And I base all of my, how I basically treat my customers on what my responses are. You know, one of the things that we do is we have a lot of fun with our clients. We have, you know, dress-up days. We have Pink Flamingo hat days. We have Winnie the Pooh hat days. We have Christmas in July where Kathy, who is our customer service rep, will dress up like Mrs. Claus on every Friday, and we'll give out cookies, we'll give out cupcakes and all kinds of things, and the customer assistant will also dress up like an elf. One of the things I like best about my business that I brag the most about, because I've got a lot of awards and stuff, the thing I find most rewarding about my business is I have somewhere between 15 and 20 people every week walk in the door to make an appointment. They don't call me on the phone. I love my doctor, but I don't go to his office to make an appointment. I call him on the phone.
That's
we have
great.
People just show up because they want to know what's going on. What are we doing fun today?
They want to be part of the action.
Absolutely. We have a lady customer who comes in once a week just to sit down and BS and talk to other clients. She has a cup of coffee, and then she drives away.
Well, look, I love what I'm doing in this whole podcasting realm in the aftermarket, and I research everybody that I talk to. I find out everything that's possibly been written about them, and I study and read and write the questions up. If we get to them, we get to them. If not, we don't. But tell me about Nancy Sinatra Day.
It was a couple of years ago, Kathy, our customer service rep, said, we should have a Nancy Sinatra Day. And I went, why can't we? She goes, well, I have white boots. And I said, okay, let's have it. So the two girls dressed up like Nancy Sinatra. They had the short skirts on and the white boots. They had their hair done like Nancy Sinatra. And the customers had a blast with it. We had a lot of fun with it.
I was, thanks for giving me the details behind it. And I think those off-the-wall things are what make not only the environment inside fun, but the customers engaged.
Well, we have a saying, the less you make it look like auto repair, the more they want to come.
Wow. Really a lot of fun, and I hope our listeners take one of these great ideas and loosen up a little bit. That's what you're really saying.
Yeah, you know, you've got to have fun with your clients. You got to have fun with your employees. Otherwise, it's work. And nobody wants to come to work. Everyone wants to come and have fun.
Tell me about marketing. You've won a few marketing awards. Tell me the one you're the most proud of.
The one I'm most proud of was about 4 or 5 years ago when gas prices were outrageous. And I was on a trip and I was driving. And when I came home and I added up all the fuel that I had spent, I'm like, holy cow, that's a lot of money. So we actually came up with a marketing idea that if you spent X amount of dollars, so say if you spent $500 or more, we gave you a $50 gas card. If you spent $250, we gave you a $25 gas card. If you spent $100 or more, we gave you a $10 gas card. And we emailed out to all of our clients. The response was amazing. We had about 162 people come in, and I think it did around $34,000 in that particular marketing piece.
Incredible. I mean, it's amazing what people will do for something they value.
Yes, absolutely.
In your emails, on the bottom of your emails, there's a quote, and I really like it. It says, if you can shape it in your mind, you will find it in your life. Why is that on your emails?
Because I what it made me realize a long time ago was I wanted to be a happier person. I wanted to have fun. I wanted to enjoy life. I wanted to travel. And I wasn't in that area in my life. There was no way I was going to be able to do that. So I'm getting a little choked up saying this. I'm sorry. But it made me realize that life is too short. I don't want to be 60 years old or 70 years old saying, I wish I had taken that trip to Phoenix, or I wish I had, you know, gone out west and done my motorcycle ride down Highway 1. And I don't want my employees to feel that way either. I want them to enjoy themselves.
Wonderful. Thank you. Very, very heartfelt. Well, it was, I think, about 17 years ago, you bought Mighty Auto Pro. And before that, you had been in the industry working for other people. Big, bold move. Wow, what made you want to get and become your own businessman?
My old boss used to tell me, you know what, you should put your money where your mouth is. Because I would come up with ideas, and he would hate them. And so finally one day he said that to me, and I said, I'm going to do that. And it took me a year to find Mighty Auto Pro, and I bought it, and the rest is history.
Wow. Okay. So you've done a lot of philanthropic things, fundraisers. Very impressed with what you've done to help great, great causes. And being in the Cleveland area with a great hospital like the Cleveland Clinic, tell us about the number one program you have.
It's called Breaks for Breasts. We use it as a fundraiser for Dr. Vincent Tuohy, who is a immunologist at the Cleveland Clinic. We chose to take all of the money that we get from Breaks for Breast to give it to his particular campaign because all of the money, every dime of it goes towards research. There's no administrative costs. There's no hidden, you know, costs in there. Every dime, every penny goes for research. And as Mighty Auto Pro was one of two shops that, or one of five shops that started this 5 years ago, 4 years ago, the first year we get $10,000, and now my significant other and her, the gal she works with, they've got it up to, I believe it is 142 shops in 28 states, and last year they did $120,000.
So here's what I want to know, because Amy Matinat, who was on a while back, talked about Breaks for Breast and about the fundraising effort, and of course, I found out that you were doing it too. So the question is how can shops get involved in this?
Well, there is a website. It's breaksforbreasts.com. They're also welcome to contact me personally. There are several different ways to do it. You can Google it. There's tons of stuff on Google about it. I think there's three pages. We already started kicking off the campaign for this year. And I just... Karen, just so you know, I'd like to take all the credit for that, but my significant other, which is Leanne Best, and her friend Laura Frank were the driving forces behind it. They've kind of taken it to a new level. My shop and their shops were, or Laura Frank's shop was one of the originals. We kind of kicked it off a campaign.
Excellent. And please thank Leanne Best for all the communications between us, getting us hooked up because we had a little email glitch, but also thank her for all that great effort for that great cause. That's a wonderful thing. And if it wasn't for Leanne, you and I wouldn't be on the phone right now. Why do you work so hard?
I actually enjoy what I do. I enjoy working with people. I still enjoy the intermixing with customers and stuff, even though I really don't have a lot to do as far as talking to them about their cars and sales. I have customers that I've known for 25 years that come to my shop and I'll ask them about their kids. I'm fixing their kids' cars. We're talking about grandchildren. I still enjoy the people that I meet, and I meet some really, really great people that come into our shop. We have lots of lawyers, lots of doctors, And they've all been a tremendous help. As a matter of fact, one of the lawyers helped us with Breaks for Breasts because we had to trademark it. She was an extreme help to us.
That's absolutely wonderful. Bill, what advice can you give service providers to break out of mediocrity and into exceptional customer service besides having all these crazy things going on? Tell us about the culture of customer service.
I'd like to tell you there's some great thought process behind it, but here's how I feel about it. When I have a guest in my house and I put them in, and I sit them down in my living room, I treat them like they're a king and a queen. That's how I tell my service reps or to treat the customers. I want them to feel like you're sitting in your living room and you're entertaining them because they're a guest in your house. And that's how I want to make my clients feel. And we do a good job of it. You know, our customers love us. And here's the thing that about Medina is there's only 25,000 people in Medina proper, and there are 32 shops within a 4-mile radius of my shop. So if any one of them are as good as I am as far as being able to repair cars, what brings them in is my customer service, because I have great customer service.
So on your worst day, you're still at the top of the pack.
Yes.
Wonderful. Any big concern or threat to your business right now?
I think the biggest threat that we have right now is obviously we're losing the middle class. It's starting to erode away, and I think we need to find a better way of communicating to our current customers. We do all of the great things that everybody else does right now as far as emailing, sending pictures, doing voicemails, doing texting, social media. But we're doing that to our current client, and we need to find a way to go out and find more clients like our current clients to reach out to them.
Where do you see yourself in the next 3 to 5 years?
I think that I would like to, I give a lot back because I learned a lot. People have helped me along the way. I'd like to do some type of coaching, help out other shops that need the help. I talk to so many shops across the country. When I travel, I always stop in at one or two shops and talk to them about what you could do better for your business, how you can make more money, how you could have a better life. And I see so many people that just push it away and say, that wouldn't work here. I can't charge more money because my customers, they'll leave me. And they would be amazed if they just charged 5% more, how much better their life would be.
How do you start, how do you move into coaching? Do you hang a shingle? Do you talk to people you know? Do you go to work for a current company? What would you do? What would be the first step?
Well, I think what I would probably do is, because I have a lot of great ties in this industry, I would more than likely go to work for someone to kind of get a feel for, is it something I'm good at? Because
sure.
I think I'm good at it, but that doesn't mean I am.
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe have a niche for a certain type of shop that would need someone's help. I don't necessarily, most of the people who are going to be listening to this podcast, they're probably already pretty successful. They don't need someone like us or like me. It's the mom and pop shops out there, or the guy who's working 70 or 80 hours a week that he's just trying to earn a living, that need our kind of help.
Well, yeah, guests in the past have said, Carm, this is like a mini bachelor's program for aspiring technicians or struggling shop owners, and even for successful shop owners who want to continue to make sure that they pick up a new idea and that they're doing a lot of things right and similar, because that's really what a success story is all about. I mean, there's not a lot of differences. It's just the nuances on how you implement. So you're right to the point where a lot of people that need that extra kick in the butt need to start listening to this podcast. So maybe that was just a commercial for the podcast.
I would agree with you.
Or supporting what we're doing here, and I thank you for that. About the industry, where's it going in the next 3 to 5 years from your perspective?
I think vehicles are being built much better. So I feel like we're going to have to go into more of a maintenance, even more than we already do. We're going to have to start to figure out how to see our customers instead of, once or twice a year, at least 3 to 4 times a year. I have my customers, I preach maintenance. So I kind of have my customers geared towards, I want to see them 3 times a year. So what I suggest every year to my customers is, hey, in the spring, you should get a wheel alignment. if I forget to do that 1 year, then what they do is they're not sure what's going on, or I haven't trained them properly. So my job is to make sure that I keep in touch with them about what they need to do maintenance-wise.
Let me tell you something. I just looked up at the clock, and I can't believe how fast this interview went. It was engaging. You were so from the heart and so honest with us, and I thank you so much. But I have one last question. Give us the great Bill Hill words to live by.
It's kind of a funny thing because I have a couple of them that I really like, but it's probably the one from Zig Ziglar is the one I like the best. Before you can change your thinking, you've got to change what's in your mind.
Right.
And that says a lot to me because that's what happened to me. I had to learn how to become a better person. I had to read books and listen to video or watch videos and listen to, you know, I don't listen to the radio. I listen to things like this on my way to work and my way home. I'm always educating myself. I always want to make myself better because if I make myself better, I make the people around me better.
Well, Bill, you're the epitome of one of my favorite quotes and words to live by is I've always felt that I'm a perpetual student and always desirous to learn something new each and every day. And part of the theme of the podcast is listen to learn just one thing and then implement it. Well, thank you. I think we're very much aligned in how we think about being successful in life. And I can't tell you how much I appreciate you being on the podcast.
Well, thank you very much for having me. I really enjoyed myself.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from another inspiring aftermarket professional. Until next time.